Today's edition of the Between the Ropes podcast is brought to you by Suplex Apparel. If you're like me, it's not easy to find really good-looking wrestling-themed clothing. It either looks wrong or it doesn't fit right, but you're not going to have that problem if you go shop at Suplex Apparel. You'll find them online at suplexapparel.com. It's pro wrestling-focused clothing for wrestlers and for fans. That's why they have a great group of wrestlers that work with them, because they know it's quality work. We're talking about guys like Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Prince Devitt, Zack Sabre Jr., Angelico, Gail Kim, and others. They associate themselves with Suplex Apparel because they know it's great stuff that you are going to like. Right now, they've got their winter range. You can get jackets and hoodies. They've got hats and rucksacks. Plus, they have a huge line of t-shirts, and they have clothing for both men and women. You should go check it out. It's online at suplexapparel.com. You are going to like what they have to offer. Plus, they ship worldwide. Anywhere that you are in the world, you can get great gear from Suplex Apparel. Become part of the Suplex Apparel team. Check them out online at suplexapparel.com. Also, a quick reminder, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. Help keep us going and contribute today. It's online at patreon.com/betweentheropes. Anything you can contribute would be helpful, even as little as a dollar a month. That will help keep us going and keep doing the podcast that you enjoy, like the one that I'm about to do right now. Check it out online. It's patreon.com/betweentheropes. And thanks for your contribution. Well, the year is coming to an end, and I figured we can't end the year without talking to our good buddy Scott Fishman from Channel Guide Magazine back on the podcast. It's been a little while since we've caught up with Scott. Are you enjoying the holiday season?
I very much am right now, and I figured this would be a good Christmas gift for yourself, having me come back on, because it's been so long. You know, it's been so many months now.
It has been a little while.
I think it would be a nice gift to bring me back here.
I imagine you're probably picking out a different pair of like elf ears or something to wear every day to get yourself in the festive mood.
Yep, you know, the Christmas sweater's out, we got the socks going.
You
everything
have,
full blast.
How many ugly Christmas sweaters do you have?
I really actually don't actually own any. I mean, you can see in my profile pictures on Facebook that I've had some from the past that my wife has made when we went to the thrift stores and we bought certain things.
So it means you still don't have those?
I don't. I have pieces of the sweater themselves, but I had one year we had a sweater and then she made a snowman and then we used real carrots, so I don't think we would be able to keep those on there for very long without them, you know.
But you still
bad.
Have that sweater and then you could just go buy a carrot?
I don't know. I'd have to ask her. She may have put it away. I don't have it, so maybe she might. But I did purchase, although I'm super jealous because I got that Jericho sweater that he had for sale. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah.
The holiday sweater. Yeah, I got that from my friend. He's a big Chris Jericho fan. And then when it came in the mail, I was like, man, this sweater is sweet. I should have got one for myself. But
so you don't have any wrestling-themed Christmas attire?
I don't. Do you?
I have one. I have in the vein of an ugly sweater, but instead it's an ugly t-shirt, but it's one of Ric Flair, and it's like a pixelated Ric Flair, and it says, the way that I say Merry Christmas is woo. Yeah.
Is that pro wrestling tees or something
no,
else?
No, that's 80s tees.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, look at that. Even a free plug for 80stees.com. I got that t-shirt last year, and I put it out there on social media. And people are like, what the heck is, where did you get that? And I was like, well, got to search sometimes, and you'll find some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the Jericho, I don't know, the sweater, the shirt, is just pretty brilliant. Making a list and checking it twice. You stupid idiot.
You can't order it now and get it in time for Christmas? Is it too late?
I think it was only to a certain point, and then they stopped selling it. It was one of those. It's for charity, too. Part of the money went for charity. Oh, wait. Actually, I went on the website right now.
Is it still available?
It's the site's still listed here. So, campaign is finished, so no. They sold 1,778 of them. So.
Well, see, not only did you not get a sweater.
It was available for the 18th.
You didn't. You missed out on the sweater, and you're not a good person because you wouldn't even give to charity. Come on, man. What's wrong with you?
I bought it. I bought this sweater for my friend, so I did give to charity. And I gave it to my friend and not kept it for myself. So there you go.
How did you not get one for yourself?
I didn't think, because, you know, we live in Florida. We don't need sweaters. I realized they had a shirt option, too, now. So I should have got the shirt option.
See, now you're telling me this.
And then I
could
have wore it to the live event next week. But yeah. It's not a Raw show, though, so Jericho won't even, you know, be there.
So what? But, you got to wear the shirt if you're going to go. I mean, it's still festive.
Yeah. I totally, you know, missed the boat on that. I'm sure if I go on eBay right now, they're probably selling them.
For triple the cost. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course,
I mean, and it is hard being here in Florida because, like, I promise I am not trying to brag because I wish it was cooler, but like on a day like today, I'm in Orlando, you're in Miami. It was upper 70s here today, where I'm at. Is it about that where you're at?
Yeah, it's about, it's been a little overcast right now. So the weather is, that's also been helping it, but it's about 79, 80 degrees right now.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like
in the middle of the day, we're taping this.
Christmas, it's supposed to be like 81 degrees.
Same here.
Which, hey, I can't complain from a standpoint that I don't want it to be like 10 below with 3 feet of snow, but I wish it was cooler because we've had like 2 days that were cooler around here, and that was about it. And there'll be a few days like in January, and that will be it, you know? And we'll continue to be in the 70s and 80s, you know, probably closer to 80 than 70. So, you know, I'll be sporting some shorts again on Christmas.
Shorts and flip-flops.
Absolutely,
man. People
would
be so jealous.
Like, I went to...
Living in Northeast.
Normally when I go to work...
In the Midwest. Midwest.
Yeah. Well, normally when I go to work, I wear shorts. And, like, for whatever reason today, I thought... The last couple of days, it's been overcast, so I figured I'd wear jeans. And I did, and I regretted it because it was so warm. And I was just like, man, I can't wait to go home and get out of these because it's hot out. It's ridiculous. Just ridiculous. So
you're spoiled.
I am spoiled. Well, so are you,
spoiled.
We both are, you know. So, well, we figured with it coming to the end of the year, we would talk about some different wrestling promotions and talk about the year that was for them, the things that really stand out. You know, it was an overall picture, kind of where they're at right now at the end of the year going into 2017. Because tell me if you agree with me. This has been one of the more unique years in wrestling that we've seen in a while.
I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, even starting the year with AJ Styles, things that we thought would not happen have happened. You know, guys working for the company that we wouldn't think of working for the company again in some way. There's guys like James Ellsworth now on WWE television, the brand split, just Shane McMahon in WWE again. I mean, just... It's been a crazy year, even, you know, when you just look at WWE.
Right. And I think the biggest thing that stands out when this is a universal wrestling thing is, well, two things. Number one, the amount of wrestlers working for so many different promotions. And with that comes the rise of the independents again. And the other is, I would say, just kind of the overall work rate for wrestlers. While there's been a lot of talented wrestlers out there in the past, but I think because of this rise of the independents and just, you know, there's so many good independent groups that are out there and so many different wrestlers, they've raised the bar to what they will do in the ring and in trying to put on the best match that they can, you know, on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, I think it's great that, you know, guys are making such a good living on the independent scene. You can, you know, if you market yourself very well using social media or, you know, there's so many ways now to promote yourself and get yourself out there, even as a wrestling promotion, and they're able, and a lot of the companies now are able to do that, and that's why you're seeing such a rise in it, because people are finding out about it, either through and watching it, whether it's internet pay-per-view, or, you know, another way of watching it on YouTube, or there's or going on their websites. There's just ways of finding these independent promotions out, and then, like you said, all this quality talent is out there. There's so much good talent, and yeah, WWE's signing a bunch of talent right now, but there's still so many names out there that are doing such a good job and having great matches, and it feels like almost like a throwback to the territory days in a sense, where there's all these promotions in different regions, and you have all these guys that are going there, you know, journeyman wrestlers in a sense, where they're traveling around the world and getting to work all these different styles and against different opponents. So it's a lot of fun to watch, and almost like they're honing their craft all over again, and then maybe even parlaying that into getting a contract. But there's a lot of guys that probably would prefer to do what they're doing right now. And, I mean, the promised land is WWE, but, you know, if you can't make it there or don't want to, you know, there's these other options for you right now. So it's very encouraging, I think, for the business.
Oh, I think so, too. I mean, look at the different landscapes from a standpoint of there are still plenty of people that want to work for WWE. WWE is still being very aggressive in going after talent. Because of all the different platforms that they have, we're talking about whether it's for NXT, whether it's to be on the main roster with Raw or SmackDown, whether it's to be part of the Cruiserweight division, now part of this, you know, this UK division that basically they're going to be starting. They're going to be doing this tournament, and who knows what they might add to that. But then at the same time, you've got guys, Cody Rhodes is the perfect example, the one that stands out the most, of a guy who is with WWE and says, you know what, I don't need to be there to be able to be successful elsewhere. I can make plenty of money, and I can work for all these different groups that I want, and I can be very happy. And Cody Rhodes has shown that. Young Bucks have definitely shown that in signing a new 2-year deal to remain with Ring of Honor and New Japan. Drew Galloway is a guy that's been extremely successful over this past year, not being in WWE. So it's proven on both fronts that you can be successful, whether you want to be in WWE, and you know, for a lot of people, that's still where they want to be. But even if you don't make it there, or that's not your goal, that you can find a lot of success elsewhere.
And I think another positive about that is, let's say you go to WWE and then they release you or they let you go, and then you decide, or you decide to leave on your own volition, like Cody Rhodes has done, and then you're making such a name for yourself in these other promotions, and WWE sees that, and then they want to bring you back, and then they'll offer you even more money and maybe a better position within the company because you went out there and showed that you're, that maybe you didn't get that opportunity to be shown in a certain light, and now you're given that chance elsewhere, and they want to bring you back. Like, I could see Cody Rhodes now being worth more than he was when he left because of the way he's been able to promote himself and market himself. Look what happened with AJ Styles. If AJ Styles had gone directly to WWE or gotten an opportunity from WWE from TNA, he would be nowhere he is right now because he went to New Japan Pro Wrestling, because he built that buzz for himself and working for New Japan and Ring of Honor and elsewhere. That really made himself a viable commodity. That's something WWE really wanted, and that's what you're seeing right now with him getting signed and getting the opportunities that he's been given. So it's almost like a double, you know, positive when you see these guys getting, you know, making such, making themselves, you know, getting to choose these opportunities and be able to make the most of it.
The AJ Styles story, yeah, the AJ Styles story is pretty incredible. I mean, from a standpoint that, we've always heard these different stories, whether there was any validity to them or not. And maybe it was just a way of thinking for, you know, past years when it came to talent that came to WWE, in looking what they wanted or the way that they perceived some different guys. And you talked about AJ going to New Japan for a couple of years and becoming a really, really hot commodity. He was to some extent before that, but WWE wasn't interested in him, or we don't think they were. And he goes to New Japan for a couple of years. He really raises his value, and WWE wants him. And not only do they want him, so which seems so strange from a few years ago where it didn't seem like they really wanted him at all, to where not only do they want him now, but look where they put him position-wise. Like, he gets this monster pop at the Royal Rumble when he debuts. You know, he's in a good match. Not one of the elite matches, but he's still in a good match at WrestleMania. But since then, I mean, the night after, he's in a 4-way to become number one contender, and he wins that match, and now he's the WWE World Champion on the SmackDown brand, and he's held that title for a while, and he's their biggest draw on a brand. It's pretty incredible just to see this, that, you know, a guy that I think a lot of wrestling fans, especially people that have followed his career, obviously, you know, is thinking, what are they going to do with AJ if he ever lands there? And worried about his positioning, to where now he's there and he's thriving.
Yeah, and I think also because he's done so well, that opens the door to even more guys to get signed, guys and girls, because maybe before they were seen as damaged goods or ones that they didn't want to sign because of their past. As with promotions, I don't know what it is about TNA or having a dark cloud over your head when you work for them, but not anymore. I mean, now I know Triple H has had a big part of that, and getting them to see the big picture that, you know, but led to the signings of Austin Aries and Bobby Roode and Eric Young. So it's continued to grow, and Roderick Strong, and, you know, out of, I think they look at guys like Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, and they see how successful and, you know, how well that they've done in kind of transitioning to WWE, that they're like, wow, we can, you know, they don't have to come through our system. These are guys that would be great to have in our locker room that are experienced veterans that have worked all around the world already, and they can come here now, and we can make the most, because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, who watches TNA? A lot of people have watched TNA, obviously, and because of, you know, the reaction that AJ Styles has got, you know, in addition to New Japan, of course, but that's where he was, his bread and butter were, and so many others. So you're seeing them come along and kind of, you know, their past isn't really spoken about, but that's where they came from. But, and fans have watched them grow, and then now they're seeing them in, you know, on the grand stage. It's really cool to see. And I think AJ Styles has helped that in his success, you know, over the past, you know, year or so.
Yeah, he definitely has, you know, when it comes to, yeah, I think there's a lot of people that definitely did watch him in TNA. I'm curious how many people still watch him now, just because, you know, the brand has fallen and they're not on a station like they once were. I mean, they've gone from being on Spike to Destination America to now being on Pop, which is going to limit how many people actually, you know, watch your product and people that know that's out there. But I mean, they're still alive. They're still doing stuff. But, you know, that was kind of an interesting thing from a standpoint that we had always thought that WWE wouldn't even sniff guys that, you know, were in TNA. And then now we've seen, I mean, you look at NXT, like you said, I mean, we've got Bobby Roode there, you got Samoa Joe there, you got Austin Aries there, Eric Young is there. It's just like, then these are the guys that even 5 years ago were all headlining in TNA, and now they're all part of NXT. You know, AJ Styles is there, and he went straight to the main roster. So it's just kind of this weird turnaround, and I think it's just shown, you know, when it comes to, you know, trying to develop more with the WWE overall and then with the network, that they've kind of broadened the horizons when it comes to what is a talent that we want to bring in here. And I'm glad that they've gotten rid of that stigma from a standpoint of, yes, if there's a big guy that's talented out there, they want to get him. But they're not just looking at big guys. And I think to some extent, they're looking a lot more at even just normal sized guys that are athletic and have a lot of talent and have shown it out there to bring in, which in the past, hey, if a guy's talented, sure, we might be interested, but you know, there's going to be some, you know, things when it comes to their size that we're going to look at a little bit more. And that's gone out the window, especially this past year.
Yeah, no longer is it just about size and, you know, the look of a wrestler. Now you have to have the goods. You got to be a good worker. I think this is the era of the worker right now when you're looking at where the work rate is very, you know, held in high regard as far as the fans' eyes. They don't want to see them, you know, do awful in the ring and barely be able to move. You know, they don't want to see a great Khali out there right now. They want to see guys who can go out there and have good matches and can move around in the ring and be able to be flexible and things like that. And so I think that's a good thing for WWE. They have this perspective and they're almost on the pulse a little bit more than they were on, you know, what's going on with WWE. And I think, with the wrestling landscape in general. And, you know, a big example of that was with the announcement that Triple H made about the UK title, with the UK being such a big hotbed for pro wrestling right now. They want to make the most of that also and take advantage of that. So that's what they're having this tournament, and that's why they're going to have a title for it. So the same thing could be said for the Cruiserweight division. They saw the need, or they saw that's a big popular style they want to bring back, and they haven't had much success for it before, and it's been a little slow start right now, but, you know, they've dedicated a lot more than they did once before in the days of Taka Michinoku, so that's good to see at least.
Well, here's the thing, too, though, because I understand that they've got more and more programming and they're trying to cater to different markets and they're trying to give everybody more value for signing up for the WWE Network. I know Triple H doesn't agree with this because he said this recently, but I still wonder if it's just too much. Like, where is that limit to where it comes to, okay, cool, I'm getting more stuff for the same amount of money that I'm paying for the network. But if I'm a wrestling fan, there's a lot of stuff I want to try to keep up with. And it's become so difficult now because you've got Raw, which obviously Raw and SmackDown have different, you know, sets of talent. You've got one, sometimes two pay-per-views per month, one for each brand when it comes to WWE. You've got the Cruiserweight show. You've got NXT. Now you're going to have a UK show. And there's just so much that it's spreading thin for the, you know, for the big wrestling fan. But, you know, at the same time, there are very few people that are going to be able to watch all of that, that even want to watch all of that. And I know that each thing incurs more cost when it comes to them, but you know, they are trying to do as much as they can, you know, to satisfy everybody, you know, and get more people to join the, you know, the network. But there comes a point where I just wonder, what's the limit? What is too much? Or is there such a thing as being too much?
I think for WWE, there's really no limits too much. I mean, if they had their way, we'd be sitting on our couch 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, watching WWE television. I think that would be the ultimate goal for them.
Quite possible. I remember the day where Vince McMahon had said that his goal was to have WWE programming on television 5 nights a week.
Well, it's getting to that point. I mean, well, technically, if you count WWE Network, it's on all the time because you have access to it. But, yeah, it's getting to be that point, even on regular TV, when you look at, you know, combine the two of first-run programming that they have.
Time to bring back Sunday Night Heat, man. That's all I got to say. Sunday Night Heat, MTV. You're interested?
Shotgun Saturday Night.
Shotgun Saturday Night, wow.
Yeah, you can bring that back. Saturday Night's main event. Tuesday in Texas, you know.
Oh, Tuesday in Texas? What? Oh,
Wednesday, I don't know. We need a Wednesday. I guess you can count NXT, but
well, we can, yeah. Or you know, we got, which one did they get rid of? Main Event or Superstars? You can bring that back with slapping on a Thursday or Friday night,
right? But it is a little oversaturation in a sense that you know it's a lot to get in. I mean, but at least you're seeing different talent now with the brand split on Mondays and Tuesdays, where it was kind of a little unbearable. You're seeing the same storylines, the same characters play out every week on the same shows two or three times a week. I mean, it got kind of difficult, a little, at least it freshened things up, especially on SmackDown, with having this brand split and having all these different characters that you could see. Well, so that a little bit, I think that helps too.
Well, I think the thing is, if you want to pick and choose, if you have the network, you can do so from a standpoint of you can keep up with Raw and SmackDown, or maybe you're even choosing from that, but everything else is just kind of gravy. There's more of a choice. You can, if you really want to be a WWE fan, you probably want to keep up with Raw and SmackDown. But that doesn't mean that you have to keep up with 205 Live. It doesn't mean you have to keep up with NXT necessarily. Because those are kind of entities onto their own. I mean, everything else has got their own storylines, and those shows don't really mix in. Now, 205 Live does a little bit, but not too much. Especially for what they do on that show. And you still get some of that cruiserweight action, obviously, on Raw. But you just got to pick and choose a little bit more and decide what you want to keep up with. You know, in that same breath, they did the brand split, obviously, earlier this year. I still have been somebody that, to some, you know, aspects, it's worked. Especially when it comes to SmackDown. And I think they have it a little bit easier from a standpoint of, you know, they only do a two-hour show rather than a three-hour show. But I haven't been the biggest fan of the brand split. I understand why they did it, but I think that things could have been done to split talent or to, you know, use all of the talent, to use the entire roster that they have and still put on two entertaining shows and not having to duplicate all of the talent all of the time. Obviously, champions will probably be on both shows, and there's going to be some times where guys are on both Raw and SmackDown, but I just think they could have done this in a different way. But they've gone back to the brand split, and it looks like it's going to be here for a while. Where are you with the brand split at come the end of the year?
I think, you know, like you said, it's benefited SmackDown the most. I think it's been exponentially better since the brand split. It's the talent, the way the writing is, the character development, the stories leading into the matches, I think are... the show just goes by faster, and I know you could say it's because they have the less hour, but I don't know, just overall has a better, fresh feel to it, to me, regularly, than what Raw has become. Raw got started in a huge way. Like, I was so excited during that first episode, and then it just kind of tapered off to some extent. So I think it just became Raw again with the long promos, especially the last couple of weeks, and long drawn out and less wrestling time. So for me, that's kind of a little bit disappointing. And there, I will say that the two authority figures on the show has been a mixed bag for me. There's sometimes, like with Mick Foley, I think he's done a great job with the whole Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman story. But, you know, and then there's times where I'm like wondering, you know, why they were going to insert him in the first place. So it's been a mixed bag for me. I see, and then Daniel Bryan and The Miz, I like that interaction and different interactions with Daniel Bryan and other guys. But so overall, I like the idea of the brand split. The only thing I kind of had a problem with to begin with was the two champions on both shows. You don't have to, I feel like you didn't need to have a separate world champion and a separate women's champion and a separate tag team champion. I think it kind of hurt the titles in a sense where you don't have kind of the luxury of having a full robust roster for each division at that point. So, I mean, they've made do in certain, in a lot of senses in divisions, but at the same time, it could be so much more importance given with just the champions and then being able to have them defend not every pay-per-view, maybe every other pay-per-view or however you want to do it, where the world champion is on different shows, and that could create some variety and make the titles seem more important. So that's my only argument that I've had, was having all these titles, it's confusing also for a fan who doesn't watch all the time. Like, okay, he's a world champion of one show, but then the other show, but this is all overall, this is all WWE, so I'm confused here. You know, I just see it from their perspective. And that's who they want to appeal to in a large sense, too, if they want to get more audience, is they want to make it easier for that viewer rather than, because they already have the, you know, the hardcore wrestling fans. So you want to reach out to guys and girls who don't watch all the time, and I think that could be confusing. But overall, I think SmackDown has really benefited from the brand split, and I like the idea of having it. I don't necessarily know or, you know, think that we need to have a pay-per-view every 2 weeks or so. I think that also is a little too much. I mean, I still watch it because I'm a creature of habit. I'll watch it on Sunday nights, and so it's good to have that content. But I don't know. I just feel that also is a little too much, but you know, if they're making the money, who am I to say? If there's people that are going to the shows and people are watching, I guess they'll continue to do that kind of way that they're doing it. And until then, they're not going to change anything. So,
see, that's, you know, that's where my argument goes when we talk about, is there too much? Okay, you throw the network, you know, out of the equation from a standpoint of, you know, even shows like NXT 205 Live and the upcoming Cruiserweight show or UK show, throw those out. Just for your average, you know, WWE fan, if they want to keep up with both Raw and SmackDown, well, you've got the two separate, you know, rosters there. You've got different storylines, obviously. So you're investing 5 hours alone right there. Then when it comes to the pay-per-views, you're talking maybe another 6 hours per month, you know, on top of that. And like you said, sometimes it's every couple of weeks. So that's where I wonder about the too much thing and the brand split. I agree with you, though. They could do the brand split. And that doesn't mean that each brand needs to have a pay-per-view per month. The way that they've done storylines and whatnot, that they're so used to at least having a monthly pay-per-view, that's something they would kind of have to figure out. And I think that's where they could get to, like, once a month, you know, instead of having a pay-per-view, you kind of have a mega show, kind of like what we're seeing next week on SmackDown, where, you know, all the different titles are going to be defended. But I don't know if they need to have a pay-per-view every month for each brand, and that's where it gets to be a bit tedious to try to keep up with everything. Like, you sit there and go, okay, I'm gonna watch the pay-per-view, now I'm gonna watch Raw, then I'm gonna watch SmackDown. You're just like, man, this is overload. But I'm a fan, I want to keep up with everything. They're just asking a lot out of you. This goes back to my whole thing with the brand split, you know, where their talent is just, the roster is so deep that I would have loved it if they could have just kept everybody on one roster and just found a way to do all these different storylines. And you, like I said, you can mix up some of the guys on the different shows. You don't have as many titles as you do right now. You just have one set of everything. And like I said before, there can be guys that appear on both shows, but you can come up with fresh storylines. And now you have all these different opportunities as well for potential storylines and feuds, because you're all on the same brand and you've got 5 hours of programming each week to fill it between Raw and SmackDown. But they didn't want to go in that direction. I think part of the reason why is because they want, if you did it that way, it might give people more of a reason to say, I'm either going to watch Raw or I'm going to watch SmackDown. By splitting it, now they've kind of put it in a way where, okay, I like this guy, but he's only going to be on this brand. I like this guy, he's only going to be on this brand. So now you've got to watch both, you know, especially when it comes to Cena. And that's why they put Cena on SmackDown, because they wanted people to watch SmackDown. And you look at where the ratings are right now, SmackDown is almost neck and neck with Raw.
And I think that's encouraging to see, because that just shows you that people are watching it because of it's the live component, which I enjoy. There's no, you know, people aren't worried about spoilers. And then the different guys that they can only see it on that show, I think that is working for them. And that's what they wanted to do. One of the reasons, like you said, is they want a reason to tune in, and that's to see these certain guys and girls you can't see on one show or the other. And the fact that the show has gotten, you know, improved so much, I think, over the brand split, and people are digging what they're seeing. So I think that's a good thing to see. And I think I would go for, so maybe even next week. I don't know, it's the holiday week and everything, but just the way that they've stacked the show so much, that next week SmackDown could be beating Raw for the first time in I don't know how long. But there's a good chance for that, just the way they have stacked stacked the card, and John Cena coming back and the championship matches, and they've done a good job of building that up. So it'll be interesting next week to see how that turns out from a ratings perspective.
One of the other things WWE obviously has invested a lot in this year is the women. You don't hear that necessarily that term, you know, women's revolution anymore, and we shouldn't. But remember at WrestleMania, it was still Divas, and that's when they introduced the Women's Championship. Now we've got two, one for Raw, one for SmackDown. I'm kind of torn thinking about where the women's division is, because obviously they give them more time, and they've definitely done something when it comes to, you know, the series of matches that we've seen between Charlotte and Sasha, and then now we're starting this a little bit more with Alexa and Becky on SmackDown, but we've seen plenty of times, too, where the crowd just hasn't reacted the way that we expected them to. And I think some of that is just the way that everything has been put together, that there's not enough backstory, that people don't know the women enough. They're not familiar with them. It's a little bit of a different thing, because when you're in NXT, you got to see them grow and kind of make their way up, and you grew with them. It's a bit of a different audience than when they were on, you know, put on the main roster, just the way that they were introduced and the way that they've been used and everything. But WWE really hasn't done a lot of investment from that standpoint. And we see these matches kind of over and over. We see them with a lot more frequency than we did when they were having these feuds in NXT. I'm kind of torn about where the women are right now. I'm glad that they're getting a little bit more of a platform, but I don't know if they really feel more important overall from a standpoint that, is the crowd really reacting to them? Are they really taking to them? Because some places they do, but there's still a lot of places where they don't.
Yeah, and like you said, I think it also comes down to the fact that they're having the same matches, at least on Raw. The same three women are being promoted every week. That can get a little old quickly, and WWE likes to do that. I would have liked to see them kind of spread out that Sasha Banks Charlotte series more than they did, like maybe on the big shows. I think they rushed through that way too quickly and gave them that build. Like, I feel like if they gave that more meaning, like let some time go by, I think fans would have been a little bit more invested than they were in these matches. And I think that was a reason why too, because they've seen this match so many times before in such a short amount of time that they've kind of become desensitized a bit for it. I think that's what the lack of reaction is. It came from. It's not like the matches were bad, and a lot of the storytelling was really good. It's just, why am I having a Hell in a Cell match, a 30-minute Iron Man match, Monday Night Raw? Like, what's the difference besides the stipulation? We're seeing the same match. Like, I think if they had spread it out over a course of a couple months, over time, and then revisited it, I think that it would have had more meaning than what it was. I think on SmackDown, though, on the opposite side of things, they've done a better job of showing a little diversity in, as far as having these storylines. And I think the fans have reacted a little better. I just watched this week. You just see the reactions from the crowd for Alexa Bliss and Becky Lynch. I think a little bit more than they have in, you know, for the on the Raw side of things. And I think they've done a little better of inserting the other women into the storylines. They've used predominantly almost all of their women in a storyline one way or another, and I think that's not the same as Raw. They haven't given the same attention to the women as they have on SmackDown for the most part. Yeah, the Raw women are getting the main events and things like that, but it's the same women. So on this show, you're getting a little bit more. You're getting the Natalya, you're getting the Carmella, you're getting the Natty. So I think that also is helping. So I could see what you're saying, but you know, it's been a huge step in the right direction. I think we both can agree on that. In the new championship, the term diva gone, although it's a little confusing now that the show's total divas and they're still using that term, so it's kind of weird. And then my little nitpicking thing is calling, I don't know if this bothers you or not, but whenever they start a women's match, they call it, you know, in a women's division match. I don't know, I think that having that, there's no really reason why they need to mention that, I think. Like, if it's just like everybody else, then why do you need to make it like it's a special attraction?
Right.
And I think that's the stigma that they need to erase, and I think that would you know, it's kind of doing more harm than good. Even the little thing of saying, you know, coming up next, the women's division match is scheduled for one fall. You know, like, I don't think they need to do that. So just little things here and there that they can make changes, tweaks here and there, but it definitely steps in the right direction. I think the women's division is in a good spot overall.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, as a company overall, it's in a really good spot. I mean, we can nitpick about some different things. I still think the formula for Raw needs to be tweaked. And I know it's difficult because it's 3 hours long and that's not going to change. But I still think that they need to tweak that formula a little bit. Maybe it doesn't need to copy SmackDown necessarily, but they've got to do something a little bit differently than they have been doing, because the ratings are still where they're at. But there's more times where you hear people say Raw was really good this week or Raw wasn't that great this week. And with SmackDown, it seems like it's either at least pretty good to not great. And it doesn't seem like it's, you know, as far in the spectrum as it is with Raw on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, there's things you could, yeah, it's a three-hour show, but I don't, like, this was unbearable almost this week. This the amount of talking that was on the show. I just couldn't believe it.
There's only so much of Mick Foley losing a key we can handle.
Yeah, it just dragged on and on, especially the tag team segment. I mean, and it was the same story, development, and in the sense of you had one guy in the ring, then someone interrupted them, then someone else interrupted, then someone else, and then it turns into a match. Like, they did the exact same thing twice on that show, and I was like, I know it's the holidays, guys, but can you have some sort of variety? Like, act like you're trying a little bit. That was the only thing I thought about this week. I mean, the talent is definitely there. It's just like these things that you can change that can make a world of difference, I think.
There's only so much you can handle of Anderson and Gallows calling people nerds. Nerd.
Oh, yeah. And then we don't need to see the old day again, too. Oh, my God.
Oh, I can't believe that.
I mean, that's been one of the misses, I think, this year when you're looking at the signings and the acquisitions, I think, for sure. Gallows and Anderson.
You know what? It's so weird when it comes to them, because they had something there with them, I thought. And hindsight is 2020, but they should have never been split from AJ. They never should have been split from AJ. And it's funny because, like, if we want a really true kind of badass heel tag team, which would be different from just about anything else that we have out there right now in WWE, that would have been the guys. And they were on their way. I mean, remember, they were really starting to click, the three of them, you know, doing the club thing and the beat up John Cena and whatnot. That was really starting to click. And then they did the brand split and they separated them. And Anderson and Gallows just kind of went off, and WWE really hasn't known how to use those guys.
And it's not hard to use those type of guys. You just build them as this unstoppable force and not make them so vulnerable. Like the first couple of weeks, they were getting beaten up by the New Day, and then they were losing matches here and there, and then they just faded in the background. They became like making jokes. I mean, I know these guys are entertaining. I've heard them on, you know, Jericho's podcast. Like, these guys can be entertaining guys if you give them the chance to, and just shackling them with like forced, you know, lines to read and things like that. I think that tremendous harm to them, and I think they should have been the ones to beat New Day for the tag titles, for sure. I think that would have been helped them so much. I mean, I like the team of Sheamus and Cesaro, but they were, you know, I think for a long-term perspective, I think that would have helped them a ton, and as a, you know, being seen as this viable dominant tag team, to see them overcome the New Day, but they couldn't even do that. So I don't know, that's I think they just were harmed so much this year. I just hope they can get, you know, some sort of momentum going next year.
I guess overall, when it comes to WWE, I think it's, when you look at all the different things that they have done and they have tried, I would say it's been a good year overall. There are still some different things I would like to see. I commend them for being aggressive as they have been when it comes to acquiring talent and going out there and getting more guys and seeing how they're going to utilize them. I hope that they would keep an open mind, like they did with guys like AJ, and bringing guys up and utilizing them. I still want to see some more when it comes to Raw and SmackDown. I don't know if we're ever really going to get to this, but I want to get away from that 50-50 booking so much. And I think that that's the way that they could strengthen guys' characters and make guys into more of a superstar level? Because right now you see some great talent out there, but there's still that little thing that's missing that can take them to the next level and overall popularity and being white hot stars. And I think that's the thing that I want to see, you know, coming up in 2017, but it's probably a long shot that we're ever going to see that.
Yeah, yes and no, though, because there is a little glimmer of hope. I think they've done an excellent job with Braun Strowman and his slow development. They've protected him, you know, very well, I think, in matches. And his victories have been against, you know, these relative unknowns, but just building him as this monster and then putting him in that scenario with the Survivor Series team, I think that was really good. And I just think they've done a good job with him. And so that can be an example of how a guy can build momentum, winning matches and being this unstoppable force and them not wavering in the direction that they're going. And hopefully, like you said, they go more in that direction where they have the open mind and give these guys the ball, like really give them the ball. Don't kind of give them, reach a certain point and then cut them off at the knees. Like for me, one of the most frustrating things was Kalisto. And I think they had something really good with him when he won the championship from Del Rio. What was it? The U.S. championship from Del Rio. Was it the U.S. or Intercontinental? I think it was the U.S. championship.
Yeah.
So I think fans were really getting behind him, and then they had him lose the title so quickly, and then he won it back, but then it didn't mean it as much. I think they had something really good with him, and they could have done more with that. So that's just an example of their own worst enemy at times. And so hopefully they kind of maybe, like you said, have that open mind and maybe learn from their past and make me move forward. But history, you know, repeats itself.
Real quick on Braun Strowman. So I had this idea. We did the podcast with Michael the other day. I threw out this idea that I thought the direction you're going, I could see Braun Strowman win the Royal Rumble.
Right.
And possibly it could be him and Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship on WrestleMania. Do you think that's
not out of the realm of possibility? I think
it's not. It's really not. It's, you know, because I mean, I could easily see that happen. Now, mind you, I think Michael came up with an even better idea, or at least one that I would like to see. He suggested Braun against Roman, but it would still be for the U.S. title, because what would happen is Kevin Owens would remain the champion, and Chris Jericho would win the Royal Rumble, and that would cause even more friction in the friendship between Jericho and Owens. And then they would fight at WrestleMania for the Universal Championship.
I like that idea a lot, because they obviously have, you know, did the slow burn with the, well, which I'm happy about. I was a little worried that they were going to rush through this breakup, and it seems like this, you know, it's still continuing. I think that would be a great way. Plus, Jericho is deserving of that accolade, I think. After all, you know, what a year he's had of reinvention, and I know he wasn't supposed to stick around as long as he did this year, but, you know, when things get rolling, he could see something working. He has made the most of it, and talk about a comeback in 2016. I mean, this is one of his best runs, I think. One of my favorite runs of his since his entire WWE career. And I think him winning the Royal Rumble would be icing on the cake for that to happen. And I think that would be a great way to kind of move that forward with him and Kevin Owens, because I think that could be a WrestleMania match, especially with the amount of time they've dedicated to them on Raw. I like that idea. I think the fans, though, are not going to be very receptive to a Roman Reigns-Braun Strowman match. I don't think that's going to do them. I could see that going in that direction. But from I get to see the fans, man, just really crapping on that.
Well, you know, the other thing is, too, if they're going to do that match, would they really do it for the U.S. title, or would they do it for the Universal Championship? Because there's still a lot of belief that whether you think it should happen right now or not, that, you know, WWE still has high plans for Roman Reigns. Whether or not they want to make WrestleMania, this year's WrestleMania, the latest in the kind of quote-unquote coronations or attempts to put him on a platform where he is not only the champion, but, you know, recognized as the true top guy. I mean, that could happen again, and maybe it would be, okay, he beats this, you know, just rampaging monster in Braun Strowman. Or, you know, would they do that around the championship at WrestleMania, or would they say, okay, we're going to have the two of them go, but it's not going to be for the Universal Championship, it's going to be for the U.S. title.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's the U.S. title, just because I don't think Braun have reached that point yet, and I think that would do any Roman any favors to have him as the Universal Champion again.
I'd still like to see Braun in NXT. And because, I mean, he was barely there. I would love for him to be there and have the opportunities to not only work with some veteran talent there, but he could have those chances to fail, to make mistakes. And you can make mistakes on NXT. And I know it's its own brand, and it's a, you know, it's become a big thing. But it's not as big as the WWE, the main roster there. We all know that. And if you're going to make mistakes, and you need to make mistakes to get better, that's the place to do it. It's there. It's on house shows for NXT. And I'm sure he's getting better, and we've seen it, especially from working all the different house shows from WWE. But and that's obviously going to be to a lot more limited audience. But that, to me, is what NXT is for some of these guys, is you go out on the road there, you work with veteran guys, you get better. But also, you learn on TV as well, and you can make mistakes on TV. You try not to, but if you do, it's not as bad of a thing, and you learn from those mistakes, and you get more seasoned before you come up to the main roster. To me, that's one of the points of having NXT, and I wish he was there rather than having to kind of learn on the fly the way he is and being scrutinized in the way that he is going to be for being on the main WWE roster.
Yeah, for I think with him, it's going to be just trial by fire. I don't see them getting, unless he does something really bad, I don't see him getting sent down. They're investing too much time,
It's too late to send him down.
Resources into him right now at this point.
That's just not going to happen right now.
Yeah,
but
I could see your point for sure. Like, I mean, I don't think they're rushing through it, but definitely he could add more time to kind of introduce himself to the audience more on NXT, and then move his way up once he made those mistakes, whatever mistakes that he would make.
Let's run through these other promotions a little quick. So NXT, I'm kind of torn on where they're at right now, because obviously they're a bigger brand, they're touring more, they still got some really good talent, but at the same time, you know, they got stripped of a lot of talent this past year with guys going up to the main roster, and you look at where they're at right now, they've kind of been in this holding pattern from a standpoint of, you know, guys in the upper echelon. Yeah, there you've had this feud with Joe and Nakamura, which has been really good. Bobby Roode now is in that picture, but outside of that, they've been missing out on some talent, and it's even more obvious in the women's division, where they're trying to work up some different women between Liv Morgan and Billie Kay and whatnot. But Asuka is far and away the dominant female there, and I think, you know, at this point of the year, where they're at with NXT, is they need to probably add some more talent.
Yeah, I think next year, they're in a rebuilding phase for sure right now. When you look at all the divisions, there's a lot of new talent they're trying to introduce. I don't know if quality-wise, they're at a point where I think a lot of them are getting this opportunity maybe ahead of before they should be getting the opportunity, but it's important to kind of to do the rebuilding process. But it's going to be a little bit more challenging than it was, I think, from the other guys who started from the ground up, started from the beginning. And now these guys are kind of having to follow in their, you know, not in their footsteps, but follow on everything that they, because fans loved everyone in NXT, and you know, now all these new characters are there. So the challenge is definitely going to be the next year on kind of proving themselves and introducing them and having successful storylines and matches and getting them ready to build, you know, NXT as a brand right now. That's going to be the challenge for sure. But I think, I know one of the encouraging things I've enjoyed is seeing guys like Ty Dillinger getting these opportunities after all this time and being there. And you have some bright spots like Bobby Roode and, you know, Ember Moon is there now with Asuka.
Yeah, and I didn't even mention her because she's obviously the next female that they've got a lot invested in, and rightfully so.
Yeah, of course. And then, but besides that, you know, Peyton Royce and Billie Kay are there. But yeah, the women's division is one of the ones that's going to be a big challenge, and kind of it'll be interesting to see if they sign, you know, other, you know, pretty known women, female talent to kind of help offset the losses that they've had. But yeah, it's definitely gonna be a rebuilding phase. But I think they've done it in the past, and I think they'll do it again. They have a lot of good talent there. It's just going to take some time, more than they had before.
Yeah, and you know what? To some extent, I mean, they have a great opportunity to add more talent. But I also wonder, too, when it comes to guys that are younger, maybe they're in their prime or they're about to reach their prime, that I don't know what the amount of money is that's being offered to a lot of guys in NXT. From everything we've heard, it can be a little bit low. or it's going to be less than the potential of what they could be making on the indies right now, whether it's work with a Ring of Honor or working for a bunch of different other places. Because of that, I do wonder, there's going to be some guys that definitely want to go to WWE, but with this change of landscape and being able to see everybody's popularity and the resurgence of the independents and the money they could potentially make from that standpoint, is it that important for them to go to WWE unless they get a really good deal? And for some guys, they might say, hey, you know what? I want to go there, but you know what? I don't like the deal that they're making right now. And, you know, while this is fun for me, it's also my living. There has to be, you know, a financial part of this for me. And because of that, I'm going to stay where I'm at. You know, and I really wonder, if it, you know, how much an effect that could have when it comes to guys possibly joining NXT.
Yeah, then they got to take a look at the pay scale and kind of having to be comparable to what they would be making on the independent scene. At least the guys that are known to, you know, well known, and they could go on the independent scene and make a living. That'll be the what you got to watch out for.
Because I mean, we've all heard different rumors about, you know, Ring of Honor talent, but it sure seems like most of the Ring of Honor talent, not all of them, are going to remain. I mean, the biggest one is Adam Cole. His contract doesn't come up until like April or something like that, and we'll see. There's been plenty of innuendo around him about him possibly going over to NXT, but I really thought that like a guy like Jay Lethal would be a prime guy that they would really go after, because you look at him, he's in his prime as a wrestler right now. I think he's proven himself. He's done everything in Ring of Honor, and I don't know how serious he is about going to WWE, and I don't know how serious they've gone after him, but it sure sounds like he's staying with Ring of Honor. I don't know if he's signed a new contract or not, but we haven't really heard too much about him. There was obviously talk about Kyle O'Reilly again this year, and him and possibly Bobby Fish, because they've been a tag team, obviously. And Kyle O'Reilly just won the Ring of Honor championship, so I don't expect him to go anywhere anytime soon. And I think Fish is probably going to stay with Ring of Honor as well. I don't know what other guys, you know, WWE might be interested in. I mean, if I was them, to me, I mean, I mentioned those guys, and they would all be great that I would want. But another guy that I would go after hard and would not change a single thing about him that I think fits perfectly.
Well, let me guess. Dalton Castle.
Dalton Castle.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I would say for sure.
I mean, Dalton Castle, to me, that act fits perfectly in NXT right now.
Yeah. It's very, everything about him is, he's already tailor-made. Like, there's not much you need to change about his presentation.
Right. But I don't know what his aspirations are when it comes to, you know, does he want to go there, or is he willing to, you know, would they stick with the gimmick, or would they want to change it? I'm sure they'd want to tweak it a little bit, but I mean, I like the idea of him being, you know, the Peacock and having the boys with him and everything. I'd want to hire the boys. I would want to keep everything about that act the same. Maybe even a little bit more flamboyant with the presentation possibly, but everything else I'd want to keep the same. And I think it would be great there, but I don't know if they'd be interested or not. So, you know, we'll have to see. You know, NXT needs some more talent. That's what we're going to see over this next year. I think before the end of 2017, I think both Samoa Joe and Nakamura are going to be up in the main roster. I think Joe could be headed there soon. I mean, I don't know if that for fact or not. I mean, now that he's already lost several opportunities to win back the championship, I could see him debuting at the Royal Rumble. I could see him debuting right after WrestleMania. I think Nakamura would be later on in the year. I'd love to see him now, but I think it's going to be a while before he's up there. Who knows what they have planned, but I will still be adamant about the decision of you bring in some of these veteran guys. I mean, especially like those two guys in particular. You know, they've only got so much tread left on the tire. I want to get the most bang for the buck. So that means I want to bring them up in the main roster, and I don't want to spend too much time, you know, in NXT. NXT is great for what it is, but if you want to make money off these guys and really put them on a big stage where they can make you money and you can do really good business with them, they have to be on the main roster. And I would like to see that changed a little bit. And I'm very curious about somebody like a Bobby Roode. Like, was he hired just to be with NXT, or do they have aspirations to bringing him up? I mean, just because you are hired for one brand doesn't mean that they might not change it, but, you know, and same with Samoa Joe. I don't know if Joe was just hired to be with NXT or if there was always plans of, hey, when the time is right, we're going to bring you up.
Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I was just going to bring that up, because I remember when we were there when Joe initially debuted, and you were pretty adamant about that. He was signed because of NXT, you don't see him moving further up, but I think the landscape has changed so much now that you're really, that you think that could be a really great possibility. And I think you're right. Like, as you look at the age of a lot of these guys, and, you know, the window of opportunity to really take advantage of them is really approaching quickly when you look at guys like Bobby Roode and Samoa Joe, and you know, so you need to take advantage of it while you can, like they did with AJ Styles. But at the same time, you're building this brand of NXT, and you don't want to deplete the name value so much. I mean, deplete the talent, I should say, talent pool so much that, you know, you're not keeping that alive too. So it's a delicate balance that they're in, right? It's a very unique time in WWE right now. Like, they have this great thing with NXT going, maybe something that they never even in their wildest dreams saw would be such, you know, explosion of popularity. But they see it, and they want to really kind of continue to nurture this lightning in a bottle, and then. But at the same time, they have to keep their main roster together too, and keep their investments. So, I think I would be surprised either if I, like you said, about seeing Joe and Nakamura in a WWE, you know, on the main roster. Especially, you know, I for whatever the deal that Nakamura had, I'm sure Joe had a pretty good deal too. So, like you said, more bang for your buck there, and having them on the main shows. The question is, where are you going to put them on Raw or SmackDown? I think Nakamura would be more of a SmackDown kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, they could go with either, you know, either group of those guys. I'm, you know, I just want to see them, you know, on that big stage sooner than later. And I, you know, I was always of the belief, hey, man, I don't think they're bringing Joe up. I think they've changed that. I think Joe has changed that with the reaction he's gotten. And I think they've gotten, you know, the right people there have taken a very, very close look at Samoa Joe, maybe a lot closer than they had ever seen him before, and changed their minds. I think Nakamura, though, was always hired to be brought up to the main roster. It's just, when is that going to happen? Hey, I mean, I remember like about a year ago, and there was talk that, hey, when they hire guys and they put them in NXT, they're going to be there for 2 years. That was always the plan. 2 years for NXT, then you get brought up to the main roster. But you got to be there for 2 years first. And I don't know if that was like a hard 2 years or not, but that was some of the expectation they were telling guys. Hey, guess what? Be ready. You're going to be here for probably 2 years before you bring you up. It could happen sooner than that, but don't get your hopes up. And that's the way I've always looked at it with these guys. I mean, Nakamura, I don't know if they said that to him necessarily, but hey, you know what? He's got wear and tear in his body, and he's already in his mid-30s, so I want to bring him up. You know, Finn Balor was there for, dear Lord, what, 2.5 years? Before he finally got called up, and then poor Finn, you know, goes up there and gets his big opportunity and then gets hurt. You know, so, I mean, weird things happen, but, you know, I think next year's probably going to be a big year for Finn, but we'll see what other guys that they go after. I mean, NXT, like you said, is kind of in this weird spot. The brand itself is stronger probably than ever before, but they have to back that up with talent. They've had such a great year and a half when it comes to the talent that's come through that. They built that brand to where it is now. Now they got to try to sustain it. And that's the thing, because talent's always going to be shuffled out of there to go to the main roster, and they have to restock, and that's where they're at right now. I mentioned Ring of Honor. I think Ring of Honor is in a very curious spot too, because with innovations, with social media, and with apps and streaming services and whatnot, I think they're in a good spot. And I think they have a very talented roster, and they have a great partnership with New Japan. But I want to see them do more with that. Ring of Honor still kind of feels like, okay, it's more of the same. It's more of the same. It's good for what it is, but when are they going to take that next big leap forward?
Yeah, it's been a very steady climb, very slow climb for Ring of Honor, but their problem has always been kind of what NXT is kind of feeling a little bit, is just having guys leaving. And, you know, you always wonder around this time of year, it seems like their contracts are set up this time of year where you're wondering if who's going to be sticking around and who's not. I mean, money talks a lot of ways. There's a thing to be said for loyalty, but, you know, you also got to put food on the table for your families, so that's also a challenge. But, yeah, I think as far as they've taken huge step forwards, whether from a production standpoint with the lighting, even as simple as the lighting, just the presentation of the show. I mean, I looked at Final Battle, and at just the entrances alone, I was like, holy crap, this is Ring of Honor. Like, looking at these entrances, like, they're pretty amazing. And then the relationship with New Japan, I think, has helped them so much. Also, just the trading of talent, it's the way it should be, I think, when you're not WWE, I think, I mean, New Japan is a big entity in itself, But being able to share talent, like, I think more companies should have these existing working relationships still, you know, where they kind of share the talent and using each of their strengths, like bringing in New Japan guys to Ring of Honor and Ring of Honor guys going over there. I think it's a great exchange going on right now with such like talented figures like Cody Rhodes now with going to Japan and the Bullet Club. But I think, yeah, I think Ring of Honor is in a great state, consider even though they lost, you know, Steve Corino and Nigel McGuinness. You know, it'll be interesting to see where they go from a broadcasting standpoint. But they've always done what they've done as far as, you know, when talent has left, they have other talent waiting in the wings, talent they have developed and have become names in themselves. So it's been like a continuous cycle as far as Ring of Honor is concerned. But I think they are, like you said, are in a great place. They got Sinclair Broadcasting, where they're on these channels, but I would like to see them on a major network. I don't, I know there was talk about Sinclair and having like a fight channel, and then they would be part of that. So that would be interesting to see. But I think they have made some big strides, in, you know, this year. So they're in a good spot. I think they're smart in the way they've kind of grown and expanded, and just the way that they're touring, and they've been smart in a lot of ways and not growing too fast.
Yeah, so they have been, Yeah. I still want to see a little bit more out of them.
What do you want to see?
I want to see them take that next step forward when it comes to taking a big jump from a standpoint of, I want to see more production. I want to see them promote a little bit better.
I think they've done a good job with that, actually. Better than they have before, I think.
Yeah. I just want to see a little bit more, and I mean, part of this is Sinclair getting behind them a little bit more, because there is an opportunity that is ripe out there, more so than I think in many a year, to where they can become, and some people make the argument that they are now, but they can become the number two wrestling promotion in the United States. And it's just, there is an investment that has to go with that. So can you put together the investment, and can you grow off of that from a standpoint of, right now we do 1,500 in a crowd. Can we, by the end of the year, can we sustain it to where we're doing 3,000 for a crowd? Or for, especially when it comes to some of these bigger shows, you know, how much can we grow and what do we need to do to get there and make our product look better overall and continue to be appealing to keep our talent? How can we be better overall as a business function? I mean, what can we do from a streaming standpoint? And like I said before, there's different opportunities when it comes to apps and streaming and whatnot to continue to grow the brand. It's just putting in that investment and really getting behind it. And working it right. And I want to see what they do. That's where I want to see them go in 2017, is be able to utilize all these different things and see if they can take another step forward and take a big step forward and really proving, like, hey, you know what? We want to be the number two promotion here in the country, and we are willing to put in that investment, money-wise, time-wise, everything that we need to do, and really have a separation there that says, hey, we're serious about this.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Like, there's a lot of opportunity. You're right. And they have and it's not like Sinclair doesn't have the resources, right? So
right.
I totally agree with you. I mean, they have taken steps, but maybe, like you said, like the television show itself, you know, it still looks, you know, compared to other companies, the WWE, and of course, it's not going to be like picture perfect.
Right.
But there's things that you can do still to improve the quality
their
of the
TV show, though,
and
sometimes
come off as a bigger show.
But their TV show sometimes
there's definitely ways of doing that, and that's what's great, because I think Ring of Honor is open to doing that, and I think Sinclair is obviously behind them in some way because of what the platform that they've been given, and the working with New Japan. I don't know how they got the lighting grid. I don't know whose investment that was. If that was that Sinclair, or was that, I don't know, but. Moving forward, that'll be good to see. I think. Well, they're in one of the best places, I think, for any company right now.
They need to do a little bit better with their TV show, because there was plenty of times leading up to like big shows to where they're like showing, you know, whatever match with the New Japan guy from weeks ago, and they're not focusing and they're not building and they're not promoting that pay-per-view enough from a standpoint of, let's build up this feud, let's build up the importance of a match and this event overall. And sometimes it's like for 2 or 3 weeks they're like in this holding pattern, and you know, we're building up the final battle, or we're building up to whatever big show. It's like there's got to be a little bit more. And
I know they're
taping stuff in advance, and things can change in a fly. It's not like they're taping their television show every week or anything like that, but there's got to be a little bit more synergy when it comes to that.
I think a lot of it comes out to, I don't know, I wouldn't say ECW mentality, but you know how they were, they had one or two of the main matches, but then it would sell itself on the brand and what you know. You would see a good show on pay-per-view, but I don't think the luxury there is now is because there's so many other options. You want to, and you're going to charge people to see your show. You want to build it up as best as you can. But it's interesting when you look at the media exposure, though, that Ring of Honor is getting. I think they've done a good job, and I think that comes down to their public relations team. It's a building – I mean, team, I say team, but, you know, it's maybe one guy or so. But just getting that penetration through ESPN, through you know, other outlets, and getting the word out in that sense. So I think they've done – you see them throwing the first pitch out at baseball games. So – I think in a lot of ways they've gotten the word out pretty well in that sense, but there's other ways that they can do to kind of put their name out there and kind of build on what they've already established.
Let's wrap up with TNA because they've had quite the year to say the least. It's funny because I mean, I've learned from this 20 years ago, people are all counting on their demise. And this was the year I was really saying, I don't think so yet. We've been down that road so many different times before. I'll believe it when I see it. And once again, they've reached out and found a lifeline. It's a different company than it was before when it comes to behind the scenes, or at least we believe it is. But where TNA is at right now, I think it's in a better position than they were at the beginning of the year, which is kind of crazy to say. But they've got a long way to go of building up their business, and they're still in a pretty precarious position considering that they've got a television deal that makes them very little, if any, money. They don't do house shows. They've got to find a way to bring in money. And now they've got new owners or new partners that are not officially owners, but we assume they are. And they're going to be. But they've got a long way to go here. They've still got some talent. And at least they've got an ownership group that has money. So for the first time in a long time, it's not like they have to sit there and go, okay, are we going to be able to do this set of tapings because, you know, we're not sure if we have the money for it or not. At least they're not at that point anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been pulling for TNA. I think on screen-wise, it's been consistently a good show. More times than not, I don't think they get enough credit for what they've been doing this year, especially with Matt Hardy and broken Matt Hardy. So I think if they can, I mean, unfortunately though, the brand has been driven so far down that I don't know if people are willing to give it more of a chance aside from, you know, watching a little clip here and there. So that's the problem that they're going to have incur. I don't know if they're going to keep the name TNA Wrestling, Impact Wrestling going forward, or it seems like they are, but you know, like you said, it's good to have, I mean, it's unfortunate what happened with Billy Corgan and everything, but at the same time, Anthem seems behind them and they have a financial backer once again. It's just this time of year, it's been reinvention after reinvention, and somehow they've managed to stay afloat. Hopefully by this time next year, it won't be the same question of, oh no, what are they going to do? How are they going to finance this or that? Hopefully it's not going to be, because that's been the last couple of years now. I don't know how, you know, this company has so many lives, more than any cat I can think of. But they've somehow continued on and been able to survive. And hopefully next year, we know what they need to do is get out of Orlando. I know it's costly, but they got to do some sort of live event, something to show the fans that they're doing more than what they have before. But at the same time, they got to establish their television show and kind of on Pop TV, that's a challenge, but they have the Fight Network. I think one of the good things is that announcement that they made with the app, you know, for fans in the UK and Ireland to watch Impact at the same time as, or right after the United States airing, North America airings. I think that a good revenue there because you're charging people to do that, and they have a big fan base there. So that'll be interesting to see. What will be interesting also is the talent that'll be still in 2017. Who's going to be sticking around? Who are they going to go with? That's another thing. I mean, there's a lot of talent out there, but you know, they've had a challenge. You got to keep the talent around also. But they've never been short on talent, but that's going to be another question.
They're going to have an issue of can they bring in talent? Because they, you know, with these, a lot of the contracts that they want to do, they want to control outside booking, which I totally understand. But I think they're going to have to get used to a formula where they allow guys to go do their own booking elsewhere. I mean, there can be
at least until they just until they do more live events or some other way where they can pay these guys, where they don't have to, you know, commit so much. I don't know. There's something, like you said, they have to put food on their table. So yeah. If they can't do it fully by TNA, TNA has to have some sort of open mind and be like, listen, we need to let these guys, you know, do what they want to do. Especially at the same time as they can be seen, you know, these are TNA guys because they're on TNA television. So it's also helping TNA as a brand because they're out there wrestling in other companies. Kind of promoting TNA in a sense.
Well, I want to see more of the open policy, kind of like what they did with Cody Rhodes, to where, hey, you know what? We'd love to get him under contract, but if we can get him here for, you know, a month or two or three or whatever, and try to just get him in the door and then try to convince him to stay, but then let them work, you know, other places. I mean, that's just kind of where they're at right now. I mean, there's going to be some guys under contract, but there's going to be others that if they want to get some names, they're going to have to allow them to work in other places. It's just whether or not they're going to allow
it. I mean, I know it wasn't the case in this scenario, but just seeing Matt Hardy on Ring of Honor television, and seeing the interaction between him and the Young Bucks, I'm like, if only, you know, there could be some sort of working relationship, like you said, with TNA and other promotions where like you said, what happens with talent coming over and working here and there. And that kind of creates a little excitement also, because you never know who's going to show up on the show. And that financially that might help too, because you're, you know, not paying them full time to be there. I mean, so another thing I think they need to work on slowly is their website, I think.
Now, the website
is a very important piece. Their website is a very important piece of any promotion. And if I'm going, you know, to look up information on ImpactWrestling.com, you're sending me to ImpactWrestling.com, and I see what I see now. So that, I think, needs to be worked on, too. So there's little things here and there that also can make a big difference. But it's also, I think what they're doing on television, though, has been really consistently good. I know you haven't been watching here, you know, you've been watching here and there, but for me, watching consistently, I've been entertained at least. I mean, they've done so many things outside the box. I think it's great. It's sad that more people aren't like giving them a chance or seeing that because of everything that they've had in the past.
But I will say this.
And the guys are suffering because of it.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly what it is, because say what you will, it might be different talent, but it's still the same brand. And there's always going to be people that say, I've tried, I've come back, you know, a couple of times already, and you've still done things that have ticked me off and not kept me around. So why should I come back again? Why should I come back to you again? And I think they found a little bit of a reason why now, and that's because of the Broken Matt Hardy character. Because they, you know, it's not going to be for everybody, but it is for a lot of people, and it's caught on. I mean, who would have ever thought you'd see delete, delete, delete at WWE shows? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that just shows you how far it's gone.
Yeah, it's freaking ridiculous to see that, you know, but great for them, you know. It shows that there are different things that can be done in the wrestling business. It's just capitalizing off of that. I mean, you know, TNA, luckily all that stuff, business-wise, hopefully it's in the past, the sordid trial, and are they going to be able to survive on a week-to-week basis and whatnot? That's in the past, and they need to keep it in the past, because that's what people talked about, and they're laughing stock. I mean, you look at that court case and some of the things that came out in transcripts and whatnot, and it's ridiculous. It's flat-out ridiculous, but they need to get past that and just say, let's just focus on what we put on television on a week-to-week basis, and hopefully people are not talking about the business aspect anymore, and they can just talk about the product, and they can talk about our talent, they can talk about our storylines, and they can grow from that. We still don't even know who's going to be part of their creative team. You know, that there's going to be changes that are going to be coming to that as well. I don't know how much it's going to change the product or not. That remains to be seen.
I think it's all going to happen in all these announcements probably in the new year, but I think it'll be important for this new company to kind of establish themselves and say, listen, we know what's happened in the past. We are here. We're committed to TNA and, you know, whatever's happened in the past. And then have all these new, have a new figurehead position, not Dixie Carter, just someone else that can say, listen, we're new, you know, we know the TNA of old. This is not TNA of old. This is something different. Some way, some marketing campaign. I don't know, something to get the word out there too, outside of what they're doing. Would also, I think, be beneficial for them.
There's a lot of things that could be beneficial for them. I would just put it that. So I will say this though. I mean, I don't think anybody is going to have the Are they going to be around come the end of 2017, like we've had for the last probably two or three years?
That's a plus. Progress. There.
That is some progress. It's baby steps right there, man. We're baby stepping right now, and at least we can say that. And I think it could be a little bit of a challenge to some extent to bringing in new talent, unless they're very open to the contract structure. But we'll see. Maybe they will do that, and we'll see where they go. You know, I think they probably hit rock bottom somewhere over the last couple of years. So I'm going to say they can't go down anymore. And I want them to continue. I want them to continue too. I mean, I haven't been as high in the product, but that doesn't mean I want them to go away. You know, I want them to survive. I want there to be another wrestling company, and I want there to be another place for guys to work. So it's just, I also want to see it at least run correctly and not look like a circus, you know, not the clown show that we've seen for the last year or even before then. So, and who knows, maybe we'll get Jeff Jarrett back in the coming year.
You know, considering everything that's happened in 2016, I wouldn't be surprised by anything anymore, pretty much.
Yeah, apparently he is, he's had some talks. We don't know exactly what about, but you know what it is, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, or something like that. It could be different in the wrestling business. Sometimes it's nothing, sometimes it is something, but if he's talking with him,
maybe. I thought he's a global force all the way.
Hey, well, you know, hey, we've already seen a global force crossover into TNA. Maybe we could see some more. I don't know.
I mean, I like the idea of different, you know, companies and things like that working together. So that would be a good thing, too.
So before we get out of here, any resolutions that you would like to pronounce going into 2017?
Overall resolution?
Sure.
All right. Well, let's see here. I don't know. Maybe just continue to put out good work, quality interviews.
Look at this guy.
Actually, no. I think my problem, you know, just maybe having some more time off my phone. I think a lot of us can.
You are attached to your phone.
Especially, you know, I'm very attached to my phone. Yes, I'll leave it at that.
Like even
but when I've been trying when I'm eating, like eating dinner or something like that, that I'll put my phone away.
Like you don't, when you text or when you tweet, or not take texting out of it, but when you tweet, it's all on your phone. Like you don't do anything like on your computer. It's all on your phone.
Yep.
You're a mad tweeter, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm pretty, I'm quick though with my.
You're intense about it, man.
Okay, I've gotten a little better though, I think. But I don't know.
I got to talk to your wife about that.
People seem to like it though.
Well, sure. That's why you've built up this mass of fans. You know, you got.
What were you going to say?
I mean, that's why when people are looking for reaction to what happened on the latest Total Divas, you know, they go check out your work. You know,
man, I think I've interviewed pretty much every women's wrestler in WWE this year. Almost,
they all love you, man. You've got the female market cornered.
I didn't talk to Alexa Bliss this year or Naomi. I think those are the two.
You talked to Lana.
Oh, Dana Brooke too. Dana Brooke. Yeah, Lana was not surprisingly good, but I mean, like really, really, actually, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I like talking to. She was a great interview, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure you enjoyed that a lot. So you're like on a first name basis with the Bella Twins and some of the other women there. Right. They all love you, man. What can I say?
Yeah. Okay.
All the women on Total Divas, they know you. They know when they want the, you know, they go to the big interview that's really going to put them, you know, up another level. It's like when they get the call, hey, Scott Fishman wants to talk with you.
Yeah, I think that's how it goes, I'm pretty sure.
I guarantee that's how it goes. So, well, I appreciate you coming on. Everybody can follow you on Twitter. It's at SM Fishman. And everybody can check out your work at channelguidemag.com. Just do a quick Google search. Just look up Scott Fishman Wrestling. And guess what? He'll come up.
Yeah. That's channelguidemag.com.
That's what I said, channelguidemag.com.
You said channelguide.com.
I thought I said mag.
channelguidemag.com.
Fine.
And then also, I just recently had my Facebook verified, my Facebook page.
So who'd you pay off for that?
/. Huh?
Who'd you pay off for that?
I paid off the anonymous general manager, and he helped make it
you
happen.
Paid somebody off for that. Well, you're all proud. You got the blue check mark now. Look at you.
Facebook.com/SMFishman, the number one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course, the number one. Oh, of course.
I tried to do just SM Fishman. Apparently someone has it, or they wouldn't let me do it. So, yeah, SM Fishman.
You're so popular now, people, get, you know, you're starting to take all your names for social media, you know?
Yeah. Sweet. I mean, I'm not between the ropes. I don't have that following yet. So
I do.
That's my resolution. I want to become bigger than between the ropes.
Mm. I do have some jackasses that have tried to take my names in the past or have successfully done it.
I mean, it's a good name.
I mean, I did have somebody this past year try to take it or try to use it for something, and it doesn't slip by me. And that got shut down very quick. Very quick.
Did you get Clarence Mason on the job?
Basically. I might have had Matlock on the job, actually. But you know what a dated reference that is. I'm not old. Oh, God.
Okay, I said Clarence Mason, 1986. You're going to Matlock.
Yeah, I went Matlock. I mean,
you've aged yourself more than I have.
Yeah, I know. I'm an old man. What can I say? You know? Way it goes sometimes. So always appreciate it, Scott. Hope you have a great holiday season, and we will talk in 2017.
All right. Sounds good. Happy holidays, everyone.
Yep. Happy holidays, everybody. And by the way, just a quick reminder, please, you can get the podcast. You can download it. You can subscribe on iTunes. While you're there, please rate and review the podcast. You can also find it on Stitcher or on SoundCloud, Google Play, and on the TuneIn app as well. Or you can go to BetweenTheRopes.com, and you can follow me personally on Twitter @BrianFrick. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.